Right. Welcome all, welcome all. We have another important story with another proactive mind behind that, and is none other than Sean Hayden, the host, creator, and director of Stage Combat, a mental health story. Hoping to shed light on many behind the scenes stories and just illustrate the breaking points while also utilizing many experts to share their thoughts. Sean is still just trucking along and has made his way to season two. So welcome once again.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks. It's good to be here.
Anytime. So we were having fun just off the air, just prepping, and then just even getting into this was also kind of a natural fit because we were just kind of like, just go for it.
Yeah.
The worst that can happen. We want to do all kinds of interviews. This would be a fun platform too.
Yeah. That's what I love about your podcast. You never know what you're going to get.
Yep. Instead of trying to be a magician, just be a walking picnic basket.
I'm going to write that down, Cam. A walking picnic basket. I like that. And may end up in an episode.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Oh, man. So you've been working for this for quite some time, and you're for the Actors Equity. But when did you just kind of ignite that interest in your mind where you're just like, this is it? This is all I want to freaking do.
You know, it's something I always wanted. And I know you talk to a lot of actors, and I think most of them tell you it's something they wanted to do all their lives. You know,
it varies.
Yeah, maybe some people said I still don't want to do it, but yeah, it was just something I always wanted to do. But you know, I grew up, we were talking, I lived in Dallas for a while. I also grew up in the Deep South and North Florida, and I grew up in a evangelical Baptist household. Yes. And you know, my family, they said, you're not going to be an actor. You know, they thought it was,
how dare you will not.
Acting is of the devil, you know, entertainment, you know, so it was very much forbidden.
So you had a bunch of Karens and Kyles before that was even a thing today.
Yeah. I had to pursue what I wanted to do in spite of everyone telling me no, you know.
That just gave you more fuel. You're like, okay.
It does. No. I mean, when I hear someone say no, my inclination is, why not?
Right. Why not?
Yeah.
It's the worst thing.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been working as an actor professionally for about 25 years. You know, I'm older than I look. And, you know, got my union card in 1998. I wasn't my goal to be anyone famous. I just wanted to be a working actor. You know,
and this would be late 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually got in Dallas, Texas. Yeah.
There you go, baby.
Yeah, I did, working at the theaters in Dallas. Yeah. And then I moved on to New York City, but I just wanted to be a working actor, you know, get my insurance, you know, something for my pension, but I acted because I love the craft of acting, you know? And so the podcast Stage Combat, a Mental Health Story is what happens when, you know, that dream job becomes a nightmare. And results in a mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm. Money cannot replace it, as we've all been down this road and you've already described it, but it's interesting how you still have to have that argument. Oh, but if I do this or that, I'll lose that. Well, but do you
need it? Yeah.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you say it's easier to kind of join the Actors Equity versus Screen Actors Guild or Stunt Guild?
Well, now it is. I mean, they changed the rules. You know, when I joined the union, I believe you had to like apprentice. I believe it was 50 weeks.
Oh, shit.
So I was working at all the theaters in Dallas, Texas, accumulating those weeks to Dallas, Fort Worth, to accumulate those weeks, and then only then can you join the union. So now they've made it much more democratic. It's basically, you know, it's pretty easy to join
now.
Wanted to make it more democratic, so it's a different approach. But it was very hard to get into the union. But there was something. Look, it was a catch-22. It's like you couldn't get hired by a union theater unless, you know, you were in the union, but then, you know, maybe you could work there and not get paid. So many times I'd be playing lead roles, but not getting paid, but there were a union. But, you know, those 50 weeks, it taught me a lot because it's like an apprenticeship. So
just
you're
like
working
buying everyone coffee.
Yeah. I mean, and so I think the idea was by the time you worked all those weeks, that you are a professional. You know, you have learned on the job everything and the rules of the union and what it means to be professional and
the rules. Yes.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So that's how I got my union card.
Sweet. But what was that very day where you're just like, I can handle all this blood, sweat, and tears. If it doesn't work out, I got a plan B, C, and D. And
I actually always had a plan B.
Okay, nice. So you didn't have to learn the hard way.
Well, here's the funny thing about my life. Because my parents said I couldn't be an actor, they said, you got to find another career. And I loved law. So I went to law school and I became a lawyer. And I actually practiced law in Dallas, Texas, at the same time I was working as a professional actor.
Nice.
So I've always had two careers. So, you know.
Look at you, man.
Always working two jobs. So I work in New York as a real estate lawyer. I have my own practice. So there always was a plan B. But I think that took out some of the. You know, one of the biggest, scariest things about being an actor is the lack of security.
Yeah.
Well, it's the lack of, right. I mean, it's security, and particularly in the theater, you know, we don't get paid anything. You know, it's ridiculous for the amount of hours and what you get paid. So you're not doing it for the money, you know?
Right.
I was doing it, you know, for insurance and pension and then for the love of the craft, you know? So, yeah. So that's always how my life has been, always having two careers at once.
Yeah, it's hard to even just kind of put in the blood, sweat, and tears for everything, but you know, anything is possible. I now a security supervisor. I drive around in a company car and report issues, and then I come here and do this damn podcast every day, and everyone wants to talk money. And I'm like, yeah, but if this becomes work, then I just, what's the point?
You podcast because you love it, right?
Right. But did you ever get to that dilemma where you're just like, I'm just working myself to death. There is no joy. Reset?
Well, I tell you what, you end up working a lot of not so great jobs with a lot of not so great people. Oh, yeah. But you know, you tell yourself, particularly if you come to New York, you got to be tough, right? You've always heard that, right?
Yeah.
And so the story in stage combat is what happens when you can't take it anymore? What happens when it crosses that line, you know? So that's always the case. I think you talk to any stage actor, for every great job, there's been a job that's not so great. For every, you know, these wonderful people to work with that you love and it's fulfilling, there's a really rotten cast in another show you can't wait to get out of. So that's just the nature of the business. And you just you're always trying to figure out how to sort of navigate a bunch of landmines in some productions. And then some are just amazing and fulfilling. And you meet friends that are friends for a lifetime.
You're like, I will always have your back. I will always.
Yeah, a lot of those people. I mean, there's people that, you know, I've been in touch with for 20 years, you know, and there's some shows where you're like, yeah, I'm okay. We don't see each other again. And that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah. And this guy's, he's respectable. He can do the talent and all, but he's just too full of himself on the in-between shit talking. You know, it is interesting how we have to kind of blur that line. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Well,
if anyone should talk to him, it's not me, but.
Yeah. And I think people in my business, you know, we all need to do better in a, you know, from the management down to the acting company, you know, we all need to be better. And it didn't used to be this way. You know, it wasn't like this when I was an actor in Dallas, Texas, you know, it's a different scene. Right.
Right.
But there wasn't the level of, you know, just cruelty and unkindness, you know, which you really hear about in stage combat.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. I had my theater horror stories, too.
Did you work in the theater?
I actually was working at Cats Theater one time. I wasn't working per se, but I was I literally took a break from that.
Yeah.
When we just had some picky teachers who kind of just wanted us to just shut up and go in the corner. And
yeah.
I didn't discover any kind of acting until I was doing some film in college and just realized, hey, improv is saving me because now there's split decision making. There is no, oh shit, what do I do? Just go with the flow. Do I buy a plane ticket here or there? Yes.
Yeah. So improv fit better the way your mind worked, the way your talent, you know, kind of clicked and sparked, right?
Did you ever try this in high school? Because like I did try it in high school, and I was like, everybody's pretty much just laughing at you with a shit-eating grin before you even said anything. And it's like, well, I can't do anything. But when college, pretty much anyone who's fucking off is already done for the day, has already taken a hike. Because they're using it for like maybe business conference, or because their girlfriend's also taking the course or something. But it's funny.
Yeah, I never did a lot of improv. I admire people who can do it, because it really takes a really sharp mind and a lot of agility, you know?
Well, it's funny because the easiest thing about it is it's very much like acting, in that you don't learn to become the character. You kind of, I mean, okay, maybe that's not the exact, because there's so many different layers to the acting process, but basically you don't try to be funny. You kind of just glide through.
You're in it.
Yeah.
You're in it in real time, reacting to things that are thrown at you,
instead of, I wrote down a joke the other night, I gotta tell to see if it kills. And it's like, no, that's stand up. You're the storyteller.
Yeah.
Looking for the fart joke, looking for the sex joke.
Improv is hardcore. It is.
It really is. But truth be told, everyone who's famous for it, you know, they fell into it, much like acting, without realizing they could make it be a thing. You know, they were just kind of already kind of an adapter, much like your blood, sweat, and tears. Is like, okay, I'll do this, I'll do that, and the sky's the limit, you know. In fact, one of my favorite stories that I actually found out recently, are you familiar with John Cassier?
I'm not.
Okay, so he, very talented voice actor, he's guest starred in all the stuff, even done physical acting, but he's best known as the voice of the Crypt Keeper on Tales from the Crypt.
Okay.
And when he talked about how he got the gig, he basically told us he didn't have a stand-up background, but he had an improv background. And he just said, well, it's either this or my parents' couch, and it's not going to be the latter. So, but he won Star Search 50 times telling the same free stand-up jokes.
Really?
He can at least put that on his thing. And, you know, of course, one of those specials are on HBO. And so then when they came to the pitching, they were able to have some kind of sway with the producers. But it is funny how, again, you go in all these stages not knowing if you can be comfortable in it, or if you're gonna have to, you know, how many times you'll fail before you get it down. And it's even interesting how we have so many other talents that we don't want to use. Like, I'm good at running, but I don't use it because it doesn't give me any joy or anything. I'm sure
it doesn't give you joy, right?
I'm sure you can do a certain kind of swim or a certain kind of imitation of a celeb, but you have no use for it as of this time. So it's getting rusty.
Yeah. And I mean, Gwen, I'm kind of picking from you. I'm so much of the opinion and of the age that if it doesn't give me joy, I don't want it in my life.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't want it in my life.
It has no need to even fret.
And there's so many things we can just make that decision. We can say, you know, not every single thing, but I can say, I can actively make a choice. This is not going to be in my life anymore.
Absolutely. Done.
Yeah.
It's said and done.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so where would you say you even just got the courage to start up this podcast? Obviously, you know, you've explained a few different times just in passing, you know, it was on your mind, you knew it was a good cause, it spoke to you, but when did you just feel like, I can make all the time to get these reliable editors, have some extra research, and then make this part of my weekly basis in addition to what I'm doing now?
Well, you know, the premise and the setup for what the podcast is sort of dictated that. So, you know, the podcast is about when I had a mental health crisis while working as a lead actor at one of the country's most powerful theaters. And, you know, I collapsed on stage one night. Was dragged off the stage and started sobbing uncontrollably in the arms of my understudy, of all people, you know, very dramatic. Because I didn't feel safe in my job. You know, and my employer wasn't listening to me. And so that collapse was actually the start of a 3.5 year, you know, it wasn't just that night. It was what happened in the job, what happened afterwards. And it was a 3.5 year journey a mental health journey. And so the thing a lot of people said to me during that 3.5 years was, oh, I didn't think this would happen to someone like you. Now, I'm not, it never comes from a bad
place. It can happen to anyone.
It could happen to anyone is the point. And it's like,
we did this with COVID, where people are like, I feel great.
Well, I know. And do we expect it to happen to some people? I don't think they mean it that way. So the idea, the courage to do the podcast was, well, let me show you how it happens. You know, so I got the idea, Cam, that if I dramatize almost like a true crime podcast, if I dramatized, took you into the world of this really prestigious theater backstage access and dramatized moment to moment, you know, with voice actors, with me telling it in the first person, music, sound effects, kind of like the old radio shows that our parents used to listen to.
Same. Yeah. I was always had an appreciation for radio. And so I got annoyed when I saw people trying to do internet radio. I was like, no, why not do a weekly basis? People download it and they can walk on it, even on their Walkman.
So that's what Stage Combat is. And every week ends with a cliffhanger. So, but it definitely has that kind of feel of sort of a true crime podcast. But I'm telling in that format my mental health story. So that was the inspiration, you know. And then once I decided to do it, I'd never done a podcast before. and certainly if you listen to the podcast, it's really elaborately produced. You know, it will give you this listening experience.
No slouch, guys. Everyone, please listen to this.
Thank you. So, you know, but I always heard it in my head, Cam. I heard it, you know, as actors, we're storytellers. So I heard the podcast in my head. I just had to find the right person to help me put it into place. Absolutely. So, you know, my husband is a screenwriter. So I, you know, wrote the series, but he was a great mentor to me because I could say.
And isn't it great that we're now in this day and age where we're not having, if this was a 2000 free interview, I would be a TMZ type guy. Oh, how did you feel comfortable coming out of here and being married to the same gender? You know, it's like, we're not even thinking about that shit anymore.
No, fuck that, right?
We're even thinking about what country a terrorist is from. We're not even thinking any other fear mongering. Yeah.
I mean, there's some fear mongering going out there.
It's still there, but.
Yeah, it's happening right now, but
it's a little more cryptic. You got to search for it.
But like, it's like we said, right? I'm not going to have things in my life that don't bring me joy, right? So anyway, so
just a side note, I'm just so happy for that because it used to just drive me crazy, and unfortunately, I had very imaginative, very progressive parents who were just like, you know, they were all about the whole ball busting effect in terms of just like anything from, okay, you might have taken an IQ test, doesn't mean you're, you know, dumb or smart. It just means you might have, you could have had a bad test day, arguably.
Well, you know, I came out in Dallas, Texas, which at that time was kind of scary. It was a little on the scary side.
It's still pretty scary. There are many times where I will see someone with a very, very cool poster on their car, a decal, and I'm afraid that they're going to get shotgunned by some stereotype, you know?
Yeah, and it is a little scary time right now. I mean, look, I live in New York City, and we have pride flags being, you know, burning. People are burning them.
Yeah, my brother lives in Arizona, and I told him, please don't go to Target anytime soon because they're threatening to machine gun those places now. You know, those services.
Yeah.
I don't want to surrender, but I also don't want to give them a target practice.
Yeah, I think everyone has to be careful and. And we just have to, you know, we just have to, in our own way, continue to push back and to continue to, you know, fight for everyone's right to just be who they want to be. You know, just stay in your lane and let whoever someone wants to be, let them be who they want to be. Just stay in your lane. I don't know why that's such such a hard lesson, but you know, there's reasons why that is happening right now.
It's
even
funnier when you realize they're so oblivious to what they're using the word boomer. It's like, you do know what that means, don't you? Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
And they use all these other slurs and they're making fun of, I'll even see Stans and Karens pick on each other. They eat each other alive. And it's like, you guys are so oblivious to what a joke you guys all are. You're eating each other alive practically.
So I guess, but, to go back to the question, that's you know, and then, you know, I just did it. I just did the podcast just because I had to. And knock on wood, that thing that I heard in my head, I was able to get it, you know, in a sound design. You know, took a lot of work. But, you know, I'm real proud of the product. And I think that, you know, it's helping
people. As you should be. I mean, I can't think of anyone who really explores this as much. I see people who talk to just theater people, but I've never seen anyone talk about the psychs. I mean, I was at UT Arlington. And I did have some people who were threatening to slit their wrists. They had just a very crappy manager to answer to every day.
Yeah. I mean, look, we say, look, there's a million podcasts out there and we say it's groundbreaking. This is a groundbreaking podcast because there is no podcast like this. And, you know,
and you can own it. You can,
and I can own it. But look, the theater industry is a broken industry and it has been for a long time. And so, you know, this podcast really calls out harmful practices that happen to happen in my experience, but is indicative of what is happening. And I know this from the past jobs I've worked. I know it from the people that have been messaging us from season one, and they're all telling us their stories. You know, we say at the end of every episode, claim your story. And they're telling us. And things have got to change, you know?
Absolutely, they got to change. Was it pretty easy to, did a lot of the experts come out of the line work, or did you still have to kind of search for a few people and it's like, hey, are you comfortable talking about this or that?
You mean for the mental health conversations we have?
Yeah.
So what you're referring to is after the end of each sort of serial type story, then we have a 10-minute conversation with a mental health professional.
Yes.
And we unpack some of the mental health issues that you heard about in the very, you know, in the true crime podcast story. So, you know, we featured two, and I didn't know them. It's Dr. Michelle Sherman, Dr. Lisa Hurwitz. And I just wrote them an email and said, this is what happened to me. I don't have an episode to show you yet. Will you come aboard and talk to me? And they both said yes.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast wrecks and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's breakfast time. Listen at breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
That's lovely.
Which was incredible. So they're both back for season two. We also have some other healthcare professionals. And, you know, Dr. Lisa Hurwitz, if you've heard her, she's sort of the voice. She's just amazing.
So reasonable.
She's so, and she just goes right to the core, right? She goes right to the core in that this is what is harmful and this is what has to stop. And so, and, you know, she helped me. You know, I had been working with my own therapist. She helped me personally just listening to the conversations, and I'm recording them for the podcast for the listeners, but I got so much out of those conversations as well. So, yeah.
And it's not every day, you know, anyone wants to be this vocal, this free-minded and feel comfortable.
I think out of the pandemic, you know, with the great resignation and a lot of people, workers in all fields, just saying, look, enough is enough. We're tired of being dehumanized. We're people, we're human beings. And part of that,
pretending it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. And our mental health has to be respected, you know? And so that's even more of a vital issue in the theater industry, because, you know, you can imagine what we're asked to do with our emotions and how the things that no other job asks you to do, right? It's just a bizarre profession. But, you know, I collapsed on stage and I never heard the words mental health mentioned once during that job. How is that possible? You know,
it's like everyone was in denial. I think I pretty much blame just from the 40s up. I mean, just like with how everyone's realizing all our workout routines cause more damage to the bones, how cereal is basically giving us diabetes, but sugar, you know, and so many other people are kind of in. I'll see so many people who will just gladly come home, smoke a cigarette, and then bitch that, oh, I'm probably going to die tomorrow. And it's like, well, that cynicism might eat you up first before the cigarette causes you, you know, leukemia or cancer.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that to be darkly funny. But it is just, it kind of goes into the, do you want to be screwed or fucked argument? It's like, well,
yeah,
neither is a good ending. I want to access plan C, which is I get the fuck out of here. But that's also a lot to say.
Well, and I think if a person is thinking like that, and we talk about that in the second season, and it's important to openly talk about that, you know, and that's when those kind of thoughts are happening, it's a good time, that it's probably a good indication it's time to talk to someone, you know, from a mental health standpoint, you know.
Oh yeah. And I'm doing a counseling session tomorrow, my first counseling ever.
Good for you. This is your first one.
Yeah. That not counting the various, you know, talk to an advisor and, oh, vote for me as advisor of the year for, are you sure you don't want to do this class? We got to fill it up. You know, I haven't ever talked to anyone who's actually there to listen, you know, who's more than just a doctor, you know, and it's interesting in that I think we've all, I wouldn't say we're all in denial, but I think some of us, it's easy to just say, maybe I don't need. You know, it's like, maybe I'm good and I'm just overthinking this. It's like, well, you still got to vent or talk to somebody. And if you don't want to talk to a personal person, you know, this is it.
Yeah. You look, and you and I were talking a little bit before we started the conversation, you know, we've got to normalize the conversation about mental health. And for too long, we've all been in denial about it. And we've all been programming that we've been programmed, particularly men, or male-identified people. Yep. But we've all been programmed that somehow in talking about it, it is an indication of weakness.
You're a pussy.
Or that there's something,
you're wimpy.
Or that there's something wrong with us, or we're broken. And then with men, you know, look, you heard the same things I heard when I was growing up, right? Man up. Boys don't cry. Suck it up. Right.
So
what does that do to us? It means, okay, when I feel something, I'm not going to acknowledge it.
Suffer alone.
Yeah. And then if it does get to a point, I'm not going to ask for help because I know I will be publicly shamed for it. That is fucked up.
Yeah.
And that's what's got to change. And so the men, Cam, who have been, you know, messaging me, and I've had Zoom calls with some of these guys, you know, we're all like wanting the same thing. So guys to guys, we need to encourage it. You are not a pussy.
You're the second person who's told me that on here.
Yeah, there is nothing wrong with you. In fact, you are, look, whatever being a man is, I mean, whatever that phrase is, you are more of a man by saying, I want to be the best man I can be. I want to be the most whole man I can be. And that means that I consider my mind as valuable as my heart if there was a problem with it, or
unless
my leg.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we would not think twice of telling someone, I had to go to the doctor because I'm having a heart condition. So we need to normalize it, that your brain, your mind is just as important as your heart. And there is nothing wrong with it. And it actually shows that you are being the best person that you can be because you care about yourself, that you see yourself with some worth. You have self-worth, and that you're worth investing in that rather than just suffering alone.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to encourage each other to do.
That, let alone just avoiding all these other regrets. Hey, I should have come here when I actually felt comfortable talking about this. It's like, well, you had, you know, 20 years. Don't piss it away, you know?
Yeah.
Talk to someone. Yeah. Talk to a random stranger on the street if it makes you feel better, you know? Just something.
Well, I think talking to anyone is good, but I think that, you know, some of the mental health professionals that I talked to is they said, you know, a lot of people feel like, oh, I don't need to. I can talk to my mom. But this is one...
It drives me crazy or something, yeah.
This one counselor we have on the episode in the season, she says, we're actually trained. we're actually, there's some science and we can help you. So
we're listening in for the specific word that every one of them has all heard.
Yeah. How are you feeling about your appointment? Are you excited, apprehensive, or?
It's been a long time coming. You know, I got nothing to lose.
Yeah. And everything to gain. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And more or less, I mean, it's just good to just see someone who just not only does this for a living, but also is ready to, you know, give various options, let alone maybe even tell you, hey, I don't have a solution for this, but I can suggest this and that. Boom, boom, boom. And it's like, okay, cool. Because there's so many different ways to go about it and get a shot at it. And like you say, it's just easy to just surrender. And it's like, but that's kind of the same thing as, hey, it's easy to suck.
I don't think of it as, I personally don't think of it as surrendering. I think it's someone to help partner with me. So in season two, you actually hear how things get so bad that, you know, I not only need a therapist, but a whole team of people. But like you actually follow what it was like meeting my first therapist. And what's not in the podcast, and just what I want to encourage you and anyone else who is listening, the first therapist I went to was not the right fit for me, And it's really easy, I think, when that happens. Well, no, I think it's easy for people when that happens to give up. It's like, okay, I tried. So, you know, for you or whomever, if the first or even the second or the third person, if it's not the right fit, that's okay. Just don't give up. Keep going until you find the right fit. And that person's not going to be offended if you're not the right fit. They get that. They're professionals. So, So just keep going till you find the right person for you that can come up with the right plan for you. Yeah.
But I get it. It's also easier said than done. There's many people who have zero patience for this. No telling. They might have already had 500 other obstacles and that this is the last straw.
Look, it just starts with a conversation with the therapist. It just starts. It's not, you know, the first time isn't to solve everything. It just starts with a conversation. And you just think of it as that, you know, it's as simple as that, then the rest will follow.
Oh, totally.
I remember I was in such bad shape, and you hear this in season two, but my therapist just said, why don't you just tell me how you're feeling? And I did. And then I did some more, and then I did some more, and that's sort of how it all evolved.
Yes. But it is funny how sometimes just the simplest thing just unlocks you, and other times just freezes you up. Like we do it even when we get picked on. It's like, why did just the most petulant person on the planet just anger me.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because we give them the power.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I was doing it recently with Insomnia, which is really the main reason I wanted to do this, is like, well, it's not a battle. It's an imperfection that can be corrected down the road, and it's going to take time.
Yeah, and I think that's something a mental health professional can help with as well, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. So good for you, man.
Well, and it has to, because I think so many of us, it's just so easy, kind of like just to sip the bottle. It's also very easy to, for better or worse, kind of just decide, well... Yeah, I'll just take a pill. It's like, well, that didn't help. Because
yeah,
it eventually your body, you know, adapts to different things. So,
you know, life is so complicated now, and social media has made things so complicated, and it's made life so isolating. And then, you know, just think about what's happening in the country. We're so divided, and there's so much.
Yeah.
You know, pain and anger. And so, gosh, I just think everyone could benefit from just sitting down and talking with someone, you know,
More or less.
Because look, life is different than when you and I were kids, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to sound like an old person, but life was simpler. It definitely felt like it. But I mean, with technology and media, and it's just made us, you know, to have all these have so much connections with technology, we're more and more alone and isolated.
Oh yeah.
You know? And that creates a lot of really mental health complications.
Yes.
So yeah, I just want to encourage anyone out there, and you know, there, you know, you don't even have to go into someone's office now. You can do it online.
Yeah.
You know, so it's easier than ever.
Now you just really have no excuse, kind of like how college is all online. Now you have no excuse to not get to class.
Yeah. Yeah. There's opportunities. So, if you and I can do anything in this podcast, let's encourage anyone out there who's listening. Hey, just take a step and find someone to talk to.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of be like, oh, I can't, you know, everything's the limit. It's like, no, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Never forget.
Yeah.
But I also get it. You know, it, some people are more shy than others. And it's just interesting how we all just decide when or if we want to get annoyed by some certain different things. And it's like, well, there's so many different ways to kind of just not only deal with de-stressing and anxiety and everything, but now there's even when there's just so many different formulas. Yeah. The last thing you want to just be like is, I just still want to suffer, even though there's different options, you know?
Yeah. You know, and that's what's so great about a mental health professional is sort of, you know, I it's just suggest what kind of things are out there for you, you know? So you know, I found my road to recovery was through cognitive therapy, through really getting into a health plan, exercise, fitness classes, mindfulness, and kind of looking, changing the way I look at the world, thinking more about the future than the past. Although I had to work through the past, I had to work through what happened to me in stage combat to get to where I am today. But I couldn't have done that on my own. You know, that only happened because of, you know, the work I put in and the mental health professionals that cared about me and helped me.
Yeah. I mean, and you'll get connected to them because you'll see that they too get joy and just uplifting people and getting them out of their shell. But when you even follow it up with, hey, you know, there's, you know, no, we're past the options. We're working this into our schedule along with different workout, diet, and other future life goals.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be brain dead, type away at the computer all day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I get it. There's still going to be many who aren't comfortable or just want to drink away their problems. And, you know, that's on them. But If anything, just why not just give it your best shot at something, just like you would, I don't know, a job interview.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. The worst you can get is, hey, I wasn't accepted. But
well, I think the worst you can get is that maybe this person wasn't the right fit for me. So if you can
there
just
you go. Maybe the job's not the right fit for me.
And
but
you know
at
the
least,
other and
me.
The other thing too is look, you know, I would encourage, you know, and don't do it in a, you know, if there's someone close to you that you that you love, you know, be supportive of, you know, without telling them they need to do this, you know, but
yes.
You know, we need to support people around and or to say, hey, I went to therapy and it really helped me. Maybe it might be something that helped you. That's, you know, what I say, you know, when I'm doing these interviews. So, mm-hmm. You know, so I think we need to think ourselves more of a community. You know, that's such a hard word to
form an after school program. Just like,
yeah, it's just who's around you, who's in your circle. You know, does that person look like they're having a hard time? Have you asked them if they're okay? You know, Have you asked them, you know, we don't even make space for, you know, the
sometimes
people
we make
around
too
us.
Much. I found out that I made so much time for other people. I kind of just didn't work on myself. I kind of just kept going.
Okay. Well, that's another thing then. And then maybe that was to avoid having to look at what was going on in your life.
Absolutely. Didn't
you think
get
that's
your
what
brain
it was?
Working. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was one time where we did a suicide watch on a purse and we were like, we haven't heard. We always have off the record, just always just report back, and if we don't hear back, stop by their house. And we did that one night. We checked in on a pal and we're like, we got to see what the fuck's up, because we have, you know, it's been radio silence, you know, that's not good. He's always talking, and sure enough he was fine, but he was kind of stressed out, just wondering to himself, and was like, well,
yeah,
I could have been anything. So good thing we went there anyway. We cheered him up.
And since we brought that up, let's just remind everyone that, look, you know, the suicide and crisis lifeline, it's 988. So you can text or call 988 24 hours a day if you are in crisis or you know someone is in crisis. So just always remember those three numbers. Just this seems like a really good time just to point that out.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing that. Because the worst thing we can ever do is just stand around idly.
Yeah.
I also like how just you don't have to be just in theater to understand this podcast. You know,
you don't at all. You don't. You know, we definitely, if you don't know anything about the theater world, we definitely throw you into it, and you're going to learn a lot about it.
Oh, just people pretending, guys.
Yeah. So it's, I think a lot of people who are listening who are not from the theater world kind of find it fascinating, because I think a lot of people think, oh, acting's not a real job, or it's not that tough. Mm-hmm. So I think you have a different idea about that.
Yeah.
Or it's not dangerous. You know, I think you come away after
any job's
to the
dangerous.
Yeah. So, but definitely, I think it's just, you know, it's kind of an HR story, you know,
and
what we've heard from people is that it's kind of frightening to think that this could happen in anyone's job. So, you know, the story of stage combat is sort of what happens when there's one failure that sort of builds upon another and sort of creates this perfect storm for an employee, which happens to be me. And then you'll see in season two, it really ramps up and gets to a very ugly place. So, you know, that's a lot of the feedback that we hear from people who aren't in the theater. It's like, oh, my mom was just in a job situation like this and it was out of control and it really destroyed her mental health and she was in a really bad place. So that's what's really interesting, I think, about the podcast is that it's a wake-up call, not just to the theater industry, but to all employers, that you need to do a lot better and maybe not do the things
not
that happen in the
death.
Story. Well, and you know, if you've heard the podcast, there's a lot of things that go wrong for the management side. And so it's a really good,
it sucks being a manager in general, because you're not always sure how much of it is just people insecure versus not using their words or just getting stressed out because eventually they become a scapegoat.
It's, or just, you know, it's hard. There's a lot of different, if you listen to the podcast, how much is this is, I don't know, people not being very good at their jobs, people covering themselves, people protective of their futures, people just not respecting the employees. So there's a lot of different things, you know. And out of this, the strange thing that happened in my life is that I was asked to write articles for HR magazines to suggest to them how employers, what they need to do to really protect mental health, you know. So from that standpoint, that told me, yes, this podcast is much more than just about the theater industry.
It's definitely about the theater industry, but I still got to applaud you for just even just deciding, you know, I feel comfortable putting this up somewhere.
Well, I thank you for that. You know, I think I thought that, you know, when you go through that much pain, you know, and you don't want it to happen to the next person down the line, you know, if I can in some small way make change, and I'm not delusional, I don't think one podcast is going to change, but it does have a lot of people. Right. They're talking about it in the industry, you know. It's creating some waves. And, you know, maybe there's some business or some theater that think, hey, remember what happened in Stage Combat? Maybe we don't want that to happen to us. Maybe we need to take a different approach, you know? So I think because, you know, I never dreamed I would have a mental health crisis in my life, much less one that happened 3.5 years.
None of us do. We don't.
Yeah. So So it was just like, well, fuck it. Right. I'm going to tell the story. Because and as you can tell from season one, so much of the story of Stage Combat is people trying to tell me that what is happening is not happening. People trying to deny me my story, you know. So this podcast was a way to say, and we say at the beginning of every episode, this is what really happened behind the scenes, right? The bumper. It was a way to tell my story, have a permanent record of it, but for other people to learn from it, other theaters, other employers to learn from it. And, you know, other actors to say, okay, look, if I had heard something like Stage Combat before this happened to me, maybe I would have walked right out of that job. You know, in my mind, that was never an option. In my mind, it never occurred to me that the kind of things that happened would happen. It just never, I want to believe the best in people. Maybe I don't believe that anymore, but it never occurred to me. But if I maybe had heard the story, we have acting instructors saying that they're making the podcast required listening for their young students.
Oh, that's lovely.
As a cautionary tale of the business, but also how to protect themselves, how to arm themselves, and to how to, you know, own their own mental health and protect it, which is just incredibly rewarding.
Nice. Well, and do you ever feel like more or less there's just so many who, you know, they still know something's, you know, troubling them, but they just still don't want to just open up. I'd rather keep it bottled up.
In the industry?
Yeah.
Yes. They're terrified to speak up. They're terrified because if they speak up like I did, they're terrified of being labeled difficult or a problem and that they won't be hired again.
Or a victim. I see people use the word victim a lot. I'm like, there's nothing victim about this.
People told me that, you know, why can't you just let this go? Or why do you insist on being a victim? You know, and you'll hear a scene in season two, my psychiatrist, because we actually take you through that relationship as well. And I said to him, I just want to cut through this. I don't want to be a victim. I want to get on with it. And he said, but you were a victim. He said, horrible things happened to you and you have to acknowledge that. So, you know, when people say that, that's a way to say, we don't want to acknowledge what happened to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. We,
what happened? I think you're being a drama queen. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you just asked me
how I feel. Yeah. Dr. Hurwitz, we put a clip on her on our Instagram last week. Yes. And she said, the person you're talking to is the expert at what they're going through. Not you, not me, not someone else. They're the expert at what they are going through.
Yeah.
So listen to them. Listen to them. And we have to, she said in so many words, we have to open the space to listen to them. Put the questions out of your mind. And just for a moment, don't think about anything else but what that person is saying. And I thought that was really powerful, what she said.
And it just shows you it doesn't always need to take a village, you know? How would you describe the editing and research progress process? Not progress. You were making progress, but
yeah, the process.
Yeah, how would you say that is on a?
It was look. I knew I was telling a story that takes place at one of the most powerful theaters in the country, so I knew I was going up against something very powerful. So I knew I had to be meticulous.
Right.
This is where my lawyer skills came into play. So it was not a, it was never a macro, an idea. I never had the luxury of just, hey, let me pick up my microphone and just tell my story. It's everything had to be scripted. It had to be meticulous. Everything was footnoted like a legal brief. So there's over 500 footnotes in the scripts of Stage Combat. So almost every line will have a footnote and it will say what email it came from. So the worst things that you hear in Stage Combat, it's from my employer's own documents. You know, and we'll find out in season two how we got those documents. So everything was footnoted, and then everything had to go through a media attorney, and he had to review every line. And I'm not anyone famous. I'm not a rich guy. I'm just someone who's trying to tell my story.
Yeah.
So that's what I had to go through. That's what I had to go through just to tell my story from the research standpoint. From the informational standpoint, the way we were able to tell what happened behind the scenes, because there's two stories. What I knew was happening and that caused me to collapse. But then there was this whole set of events that I don't know about. And we tell both of those stories at the same time. So that actually came from my employer's own internal documents.
Wow.
And so we used those to dramatize what was going on behind the scenes. And then you'll learn in season two how everyone's know, how did you get the documents? We got them legally, but that is part of the story of season two, and you'll find that out. And then the process, like I told you, it was writing the scripts. They would go through my husband, my mother-in-law taught writing for all of her life. So I had the two best mentors who also cared about me, but are pretty tough. And so then I would go back and I would rewrite, and then I would start recording. So I met a guy here in Harlem named Andrew Lin, who's very talented.
Hi, Andrew.
And he'll appreciate that shout out. And so we worked together. We recorded. We brought the voice actors in. A lot of the voice actors were people I worked with in my former acting studio. So they really came to rally behind me. And then I brought in all the music. And then we would just start putting it together. It's like a layer cake, right?
Yeah.
You know, you lay in this layer and this layer.
All the frosting.
Yeah. And then the ear candy. And then you listen to it.
You get to eat it when it's finally posted.
Yeah. But it takes a long time to when it's ready to eat.
You get all these appetizers, but you still haven't tasted it until it actually takes off.
Yeah. But it was a long process. We would listen to the episodes multiple times and then go back and make changes to make it better, to make it clearer, to make it move quicker and all of that. So I'm just going to check something real quick, Cam.
No, I'm good.
Because I'm sort of losing. Okay, I'm good. There you go.
No, I'm good.
Yeah, so that was, you know, it was a long, involved process. Probably every one of those 20-minute segments that you hear the story part, there's probably about 20 hours of editing and recording involved. Yeah,
I bet.
It's very, very intense.
And it's interesting how there's just always like a little something you'll find. And it's like, well, I'll do that better next time.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this. We were, you know, with season one behind us, season two, we learned a lot. So we were making better choices earlier versus, you know, and, you know, a lot of things, you know, a lot of really key events. We had to work over and over to make sure, does the audience understand why this is a big event? Does the audience understand, you know, why this is unsafe in the theater, because they're not from the theater. So a lot of those things took a lot of different passes to make sure the audience was getting it and that we were being very clear.
It really is annoying, too, when sometimes you don't get enough feedback at first. So you're like, well, do we just not have an audience yet? Or is everyone just choosing to not go the extra mile and just leave a few reviews, second opinions?
Yes. Yeah, we were lucky. We had a tremendous feedback from the gate out. So that was great. But yeah, basically we kind of used the husband and the mother-in-law to run everything through as our barometer.
Not everyone wants to share, you know, and say what's on their mind. But yeah, it is cool in that once you get to the end of the tunnel, now you can focus on what other stuff really stands out and can have some kind of a just greater effect, and you're comfortable saying the different dialogues and intros, let alone
you
know the meat and potatoes, but you don't got to connect at all.
Yeah, you know what I do? I do the night before every episode goes out, I lay in my bed, I put my phone on my chest, and I listen to the episode one more time. I'm not going to be making any changes. But I just listened to it just to sort of, it sounds corny, but kind of honor what went into, not only what happened to me, but just to produce that and to have a record of it, mm-hmm. and before it goes out to everybody.
Totally.
And then I hit that publish button, and that's a really good feeling.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then it's less, you know, someone can ask you something on the spot. You don't have to respond with, well, what part are you talking about? You've already.
Oh, I know recently. These. I know these episodes inside and out.
Perfect, but you know, you've already done an extra refresh, so now you're even more ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
So when you get the inevitable five questions, what was this about? How about that? It's like, well, this and that meant this and that. You know. that's good too. Just a little extra ratings. That's good too.
Yeah.
A little bit helps. Altogether, when you've been able to get so much detail, material, but what truly do you think makes you comfortable describing all these real life stories? Other than that, you've experienced it yourself.
Well, I had to deal with them, right? I had to put the work into to recover out of the panic disorder that I developed working at this theater. I had to make sense of what happened, you know, I had to connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
So I had already connected the story as part of just trying to come out on the other side of the disorder.
Mm.
So, you know, I made a decision on the 1 year anniversary that I collapsed because I just had this, I was trying to mask that I was living with this panic disorder and it was too much. And I don't have a million Instagram followers, but I made a decision. This is actually in season two. It's a big moment. And I did a post. I didn't tell people how it happened, but I said, I have a panic disorder and it happened when I collapsed at a theater. And this is what I've learned, you know, over the past year. And so I think once I did that, that was a big step for me. You know, the podcast wouldn't come out for another couple of years or even the idea for it. But so once I did that, but I never told the story of how it happened.
Right.
Or what happened at my job, that was a big step, you know, because you know, look, would there be retaliation? Would there be, you know, there's just some, you know, not kind people in the industry.
And, yeah.
You know, are they going to come after me? So I was always aware of that. But again, the alternative is living in fear, you know, and I lived my life in fear for 3.5 years. Because of what happened at this theater. And I had to say, sure. I'm not going to live in fear anymore. That's not a life.
It really isn't. So,
you know, when you look at it that way, Cam, it was, I don't want to say it was an easy decision, but it was the right decision. And you just put one foot in front of yourself and you just go for it, you know?
Absolutely. It's the oldest trick in the book too. It's ironic, you know, but it's also, it doesn't stop working. You know, so it's always going to be true.
Yeah. And look, there's so many people that are not in good places in their lives.
Yeah.
That don't have love and joy. And they want you to live your life in fear, you know?
Totally.
And
what I can't have, neither can you.
Well, it comes back to what we were saying at the beginning of this conversation, right? It's what can we do to keep in our lives the things that bring us joy and to get rid of the things that don't.
Yep.
And that can, and that can, and that can be people, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was, sort of how I just kind of put it out there. But I, you know, that, that night before when you put it out there, it's really frightening. And then once I started to get the messages from actors and people and of all kinds of people, you know, look, I'm a white guy in New York City, you know, we have people of every identity and community, and somehow this podcast resonates with them, which I never expected. And, you know, I'm honored that it is resonating with so many people. And so once those messages started coming in, I'm like, okay,
it's rewarding.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's like, it works and people get it. And, you know, I always thought the story was bigger than just my story. And so when I started getting those messages, I'm like, yes, it is bigger than me. Yeah.
But like I say, it didn't happen overnight either. You know, I think that's the other thing too. We got to keep busting those bubbles. It's like, guys, this was never going to happen overnight.
You mean in terms of
just any project and how it comes together? You know, it's like,
oh yeah. I mean, I started writing Stage Combat in April of last year. But then it was a story that started in 2019. Yeah. And so, yeah.
And it helps that you had time to kind of just have those thoughts kind of heal to where they were kind of a little more coherent. Because those first two or three years, depending on what it is, that felt traumatic.
There's no way.
Yeah, you're still winding down.
There's no way. And here's what's really ironic. The way I'm talking to you right now, it's not how I was able to talk to someone when I started the podcast. Because I was still in pretty bad shape a year ago. It was doing the podcast that pulled me a lot through the other side, because it was the ultimate cognitive therapy. It was the power of claiming my story that people told me didn't happen. You know, it was like recreating the crime scene by bringing my friends in and having them reenact this trauma. So what I didn't expect was that by the time we were really into production, you know, my husband starts noticing, you know, you're not stuttering anymore. And I developed a stutter as a result of what happened. Or, you know, you seem to be more outgoing, or you're talking more confidently. And my doctor said the podcast was the best thing I could have done for myself. So I never thought that was going to be the result. I didn't put all this effort and expense into doing a podcast for my health, but then that has been, you know, the byproduct. And we ended up rewriting the last episode because my life and sort of the way I was handling the panic disorder had really changed as a result of the podcast.
But to even hear that afterwards, you know, it's, they're not doing that to even just have someone who is also, you know, they're doing more than just giving you a pat on the back. They're just reminding you, hey, now you can even talk about any of this coherently without breaking down, crying about it all day.
Oh, when I was go start recording, I would break down crying, Cam. And this poor editor that I just met, I'm just like, oh my God, he's going to say, no, I can't work on this. He was going to be like, I can't work on this with you, dude. This is too heavy stuff. You know, I didn't even know if I was going to be able to pull it off, because every time I record something, you have to go back and revisit it. Right. So, and then I have to talk with my therapist. I just recorded this. And then remember that when this happened, well, then I started, you know, connecting these dots. So that kind of like had its own sort of re-traumatization. But then once we got into production and things were recorded, and then you sort of have that feeling that past had been recorded, it had been set aside. And so I think that was also a very kind of healing thing for me. You know, and sort of, you know, it's the same things that you end up doing in therapy, you know? What, you know, to be able to have an opportunity to talk and put into perspective and get to a point where you can possibly see that as part of your past and not your future.
Imagine that it's not no longer a deal, but it's still something that happened and you've embraced it now.
You have to honor it as part of your past. I honor what happened to me at this theater in Stage Combat. That is my story. But now I'm at a point where I'm looking to my future. And I wouldn't have said that a year ago.
Yeah. It would have still been kind of like a tick growing on you where you're just like, okay.
I was still in the middle of it. Yeah.
We've talked so much about this. I feel like we've covered the base. And obviously there's still going to be wonderful surprises coming in and out. We can still talk about just some of the skills that you honed and, just so many of everything. You've done regional theater. You've done just so many others that plays that are always being readapted from Angels in America to the Bridges of Madison County. And what has been kind of your favorite? Obviously, everyone likes to keep it fresh and new, but what's been your personal favorites in terms of just like areas to tour and types of roles to play?
Well, you know, my wheelhouse was always sort of these kind of tortured, damaged men, which was the father and Billy Elliot. So I don't know if you've mentioned Stage Combat takes place in a production of Billy Elliot, the musical, and I was playing the dad. I think that after what I went through, I would be okay not playing those roles for a while. You know what I mean? If I ever go back to acting, I don't know what the future holds for me in that regard. And that's part of the story of season two.
Yeah.
I think my happiest times are, you know, these large cast shows, you know, musicals particularly. There's a lot of energies there. It's a lot of opportunity for things to not be so great.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, plays with small cast, you know, it's just something much more intimate and much more, I don't know, there's a certain maturity, you know? And so if I ever did something again, that's sort of where I would want to be. And I just love a good play, you know? Musicals are great too, but I think my heart sort of lies in just the great American theater when it comes to plays. So
that is a good point.
And I did Angels in America in Fort Worth, Texas, actually.
Oh, sweet.
Yes. I did it at Stage West. Yeah. And I'll tell you something else. I played the attorney who was gay, was struggling with his sexuality, and I had just came out. I just came out. So I was actually playing. I wasn't a Mormon. The lawyer in Angels in America is a Mormon, but I was a Baptist. And I was playing my life essentially in a lot of ways on stage in Fort Worth, Texas.
Nice.
Isn't that bizarre? Yeah.
It is interesting how people willingly choose what to be offended by, even though there's so many places that can be hosted in some of the most backward states. It's just very interesting how it just shuffles around.
Well, what I remember, and when I was in Texas, that the theater was very forward. It was very progressive. I remember the theaters they weren't afraid of the material they were putting on stages. Mm. That's my recollection of theater. This is in the 90s, late 90s. So
that's good.
Yeah. That's a long time ago. So
it seemed like there was always some kind of shielding behind there, but every once in a while you'd still encounter someone who's just being a total just jerk and you're just like, dude, why are you here?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we call them a Chad. Chad is the character in Stage Combat. So And that's what I have a lot of people writing me, Cam, is that nice. That I've worked with a Chad type of person and my employer didn't do anything, or I was bullied by a Chad. I was terrorized by a Chad. You know, that's the most common thing people have been writing me about after listening to the podcast. So,
oh, wow. It makes you both happy and sad at the same time. It's like, I'm sorry you had to share my pain, but at the same time, I'm glad we are all understanding each other. Yeah.
Well, what they tell me is that they don't feel as alone, you know, that they're identifying with my story somehow, because I think anybody that's been in a bad on the job situation or with another employee, you know, you can feel very isolated and alone until you hear someone who has a similar story. And then you're like, yes, the world makes sense. You know, it's not, this isn't just something I went through. This is maybe a common problem in this industry or in this business, or when management doesn't handle something in the right way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of these days we're finally going to just break through to where it's just a second nature. I mean, like you say, it's good that we still have a bunch of different things we can review, but it still can be a little taxing at times when we feel like we're repeating ourselves. It's like, guys, we've been talking about this for a while.
Well, we just have to keep chipping away. We just have to keep talking, and we have to not stop talking about it, you know? So whether it's not, you know, it's being abused in an employment situation or mental health, you just have to keep talking about it. And we're not going to stop talking about it. We're not going to stop talking about it until our employers do better jobs. Yeah. They do their jobs better. They take care of us. We're not going to stop talking about it. I'm not going to stop talking about it. And I'm certainly not going to stop talking about it in the theater industry. Yeah. Well, I'm just going to do everything I can. And again, I'm not delusional. Change comes very slowly.
Yeah.
You know, we can't get outside of one on stage, one blog, we can't get the theater press in New York City to cover Stage Combat.
Wow.
How is that possible when you've heard the podcast? It is a whistleblowing podcast on the industry about a theater that imported 21 productions to Broadway. And we cannot get the theater press to cover that. And you have to ask yourself, why is that? So it does. We're still going to keep talking about it. You know, you can choose not to cover it. And that's unfortunate because our listeners and our followers want it to be covered, but we're not going to stop talking about it.
Right. It does kind of get to that point where, why is it not an agenda?
Yeah. Well, I think you can ask yourself a lot of questions. You know, the theater industry is very insular. My employer is very powerful. My former employer, there are advertising dollars that, you know, are those at play? I don't know. Is it because of how controversial the podcast is that it, you know, it really calls out harmful practices in the industry that, you know, the people want to talk about it, the actors want to talk about it, but the institutions don't want to talk about it. Because it's not a good look, you know? So it's the power of the institutions don't want to talk about it, but the people in the industry, they want to talk about it. So they're doing, you know, unfortunately, they're doing a disservice to the very people that read their publications, that read their, you know, their digital media outlets. So hopefully they'll come around. Season 2 premieres July 25th. We'd love to talk to them, and you know, we are here.
The conversation is always going to be open. Yeah.
And in the meantime, we're going to talk to people like you. We're going to talk to people like, you know, whoever wants to talk about mental health and what's happening in my industry.
Even if your certain circumstances completely different, there's still a lot of everything. There's so many other factors that you can actually relate to and realize some of these problems all begin the same way.
Yeah, the story of Stage Combat. Yeah, because I think it comes back to what we were saying is that, you know, people messaging us from different industries and just saying they had a similar situation.
I really hope you get to do at least 6 seasons of this, maybe even 10, you know, just keep this thing up and going, you know, because like you say, the response is landing and the numbers are organic and you just can't.
It's very organic. I think that when this second season comes out, because the story of what happened in season 1 is just the beginning, I think people are going to be pretty shocked because the story gets a lot worse. So I think that's really when people find out, oh, that's what happened. You know, I think that's going to have a really big effect. And it very much is a word of mouth sort of podcast, you know. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, my personal story will end in season 2. So my personal story. But, you know, we're talking right now of what happens with future seasons, whether we tell other stories or whether we partner with other, you know, producers. So we'll see where all that goes. The interesting thing out of this was, you know, realizing that, you know, I enjoyed making a podcast, and
are there any plans to expand to other networks? You're on Buzzsprout.
We're on all the directories, you know. So we're through Buzzsprout, but we're on all the major directories.
Oh, really?
You know?
I couldn't find you. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're Apple, Google, Spotify, and then for people who are challenged with apps, you know, you can listen to it at stagecombatthepodcast.com. So, but we're on, you know, on all the directories, so there's no problem finding us.
Wonderful, wonderful. And any other podcasts you might even partner up with, like do a trade show? I'm talking on this show, and then we're going to have you hear the second part, do a crossover.
Well, in terms, we're actually, there's a small theater podcast called Theater People Podcast. They're actually reviving it, and it's actually part of, it's run by a guy named Patrick Hines, who's part of the True Obsessed Crime Podcast. Let me make sure I get that right. True Obsessed Crime Podcast, the Obsessed Network. He's a great guy, and was so they're actually dropping in our first episode from episode one next Tuesday. I believe that's July 18th, into their podcast, and there's an interview with me. We have an interview coming out with Stage Whisper Pod, which is a big theater podcast. A second interview, they interviewed us for the first one. But then on the partnership front, as far as partnering to produce future content, there's some discussions going on, and we'll see where that goes. But I'm excited about the possibilities.
We gotta have you back on to discuss fearlessness, though, mainly.
To discuss what?
Fearlessness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But, I mean, Michael Rosenbaum's having that be his career now, and he's another one who he'll have celebs on, but he picks very specific ones who can actually get real instead of just be me.
And... Yeah. I mean, look, there's some ideas, you know, we may do both. I mean, we may do like another investigative type of podcast that may be in the theater industry. It may not. We may continue having conversations with real people and Broadway people about, you know, their mental health struggles or their experiences working in the industry. So there's a lot of different things, but we'll see what happens. We're excited about some of the chats we're having with some other potential partners.
Lovely. I feel like I have just gotten a lobotomy because I have not only, and I mean that in a good way, in that I have not only picked your brain, I feel like you picked mine.
You did.
But it's also very natural in that you did. You're ready
a lot
to
of
talk
good questions.
About it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Thank you.
You did.
Believe it or not, I really only write down 5 questions and kind of expand from there based on where it's going. But it was good to, just from your back and forth emails, I also knew is like, see, this guy, he's a visionary, and he also clearly values his time. You know, he's very communicative, and that's not always easy to do sometimes in the pre-render, you know, the warm-up. And but it's also good to know that you, beyond the emotional reward, beyond just the feedback, beyond successfully publishing this, that you're going to keep getting, you might even see, let's say you stop doing this 10 years down the road, you still might see people discover this. It'll come up in some article. It'll probably come up under true crime and mental health podcasts, you know.
Well, that's the great thing about podcast, right?
It's always there unless someone deletes the feed.
It's always there. And then, you know, the story of Stage Combat, you know, it hasn't been fully told. It won't be fully told until the end of August, you know, when we start season 2 in July 25th. So, you know, there'll be new people discovering it for the first time, you know, going into the fall and thereafter. So, you know, so I'll just say for your listeners, you know, season 1 has 9 episodes. They're all out. So people can.
That's a good point
them.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes up none of your time, guys. You got time for 9 episodes.
They're 9 episodes. They're pretty manageable. They're about 30 minutes. That includes the talk back with a mental health professional. And then season 2 will start dropping July 25th weekly. Mm-hmm. And I believe they run Cam through the last week of August. So it's like the perfect kind of summertime thing to listen to.
Yeah.
You know,
people are winding down.
Yeah.
Talking less
listen
about
to it by
movies,
the pool, the
music.
Beach, the lake. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it's also good that, again, I mean, you've also wisely titled it with the mental health subtitle. So kind of like how people will rank if they have music or movie in their title, you have mental health in the title. So everyone instantly, there's no mistaking it. There's, you're never going to get anyone saying, well, I didn't understand what this was about. Well,
yeah, that was really important to me because, you know, it is a salacious backstage story, which happens to be my life. But I never wanted people to forget that it is a mental health story. I never wanted people to forget that that's really what the story is about and why it exists. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I have to tell you, is it juicy and fun and, you know, lushly produced to get you to listen to it? Yeah, I'll tell you that because it is. It's a cool listen. But then you're also going to probably come away at the end of it learning some things about mental health that you hadn't thought about.
Right?
Yeah.
And let alone just remembering to tell everybody, hey, any of you can do this. You can talk about your messed up life.
And look, you don't have to do what I did. You don't have to do a 2-season, 20-episode podcast, but anybody can claim their story. Anybody can tell their story, you know? And look, that can just be talking to a buddy and say, hey, can we grab a beer? Can I chat about something? Or being open to hear.
This is eating me up right now. Can you just come over here?
Yes.
Talk with me.
And then, like I said, the other side, Cam, if you hear that being open, like saying, okay, I need to make space for this, you know, not yeah. You know, what do we say in this country? How are you doing? I'm fine. We don't care how the person's really doing. We just say they're fine, you know? So
give less predictable answers.
Yeah. Anybody can tell their story. You know, sometimes, you know, people just do it in a simple Instagram post. Here's where I am today, guys. And then, you know, some people find that very rewarding because people will comment and say, hey, yeah, I've been there too, or DM me. Let's talk about this, you know? Use that social media. If it's so, it's isolated us so much, but I've seen it really effective when it comes to mental health and people kind of finding a support system with, you know, people are very generous many times to comment back and say, hey, I'm right there with you. I've been through this myself, you know. But if you don't want to be public, you know, share your story with, you know, someone that you trust, someone that you feel hears you, someone that you feel sees you, you know.
Being seen is definitely part of it. And we definitely mean it more figuratively, you know, just.
Yeah.
Say something. And
that's very much a part of my story because I was not being seen. I was not being heard. That made the trauma worse. And we'll see that in season two. But yeah, we gotta be open to each other, man. You know, we can all do better.
Oh, totally. It even goes back to the whole, once people stop going to college, they assume, well, I don't need to learn anymore. It's like, well, you're still learning.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we're still learning about ourselves, you know? I never dreamed at my age, you know, given what I've lived through in my life, that this would happen to me. I've learned more about myself in the last 3.5 years than I have a lifetime.
Oh, hell, when I'd planned this whole fucking podcast, like, I got ideas for the next 5 years, but I don't know when they'll drop. I just leave it all open, but I just at least have, I pretty much just focus on the individual stuff and then decide it organically drops when it drops. Like, this episode is going to organically drop when it drops because it feels like it really needs to drop right here and there.
Yeah.
At that time, in that block. And I do 5 episodes a week because I don't want people to wait. I want there to be, it works for me too.
Do 5 episodes a week.
Well, it works for me in that I have all kinds of things.
That's amazing.
So if you don't want to listen to the action stuff, you can listen to the documentary stuff or the history stuff or the horror special. But at least you guys are rewarded in that, hey, your episode's up. You don't got to wait in front of these 50 other assholes I've interviewed. You're all getting a piece of the cake and sharing it.
Yeah.
But it's also sometimes easier said than done, because sometimes, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people like to let this become work.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and one of she's in season two, one of the mental health counselors. She was talking about acting, but it implies the same thing. She says,
yeah,
you know, when your art, I consider being a podcaster as art, when your art becomes just a job and not a hobby, and she meant the hobby in the sense of, remember when we had hobbies, it was something we loved to do.
Yeah.
But when it becomes that. Yeah, it's time to change the way you're approaching your art, you know, and you need to find ways to enjoy that art so that it becomes a hobby again, you know. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. Certainly a lot of actors.
Yeah.
You know, where you lose the joy of what brought you to do it in the first place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think we're also getting to that point where we forget what our breaking point is, even the various things that we do. We got to remind ourselves, hey, you know, you're cool with this and that, but are you really, you know, is it going to slowly eat you up? Cause this is when you have those random freakouts or just sudden just breakdowns or just being like, God damn it. I'm done with this. This sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just too much. And the last thing you need is just another just episode. And I don't mean in just like a figuratively, I don't want to even give a negative connotation to it. So I just mean just a moment where you just, again, don't feel in control of your body and you're just prone to just a meltdown. And yeah. I feel like a lot of people, like you were talking earlier, it does seem like so many are just still just letting stuff eat them up. I joke around with other pals who are married and they're cynics. They don't mean to be, but, and this is not to degrade their character in any way, shape or form, but it does often they'll joke. I'll be like, hey, how's married life? And they'll be like, just don't get married. I'm like, well, you've toughed it out this long. What's wrong in your marriage? And it's like, some people just can't help but bitch, you know, even though they're technically very happy, they just get annoyed by just the smallest thing, watching the kids.
Yeah.
Trading off on chores.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, I think a little mental health therapy could help, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of sort that out, get to the bottom of that.
If you don't want to talk about it, still just have a private session with someone and just say, hey,
absolutely.
I got to talk to someone who I actually want to talk to because the people I'm closest to just seem to be mad all the time. Or again, you're acting like I'm a crybaby.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for just giving a voice to this. And
hey, I appreciate it so much. This was such a great conversation. And you have, my friend, such a great spirit. And I want you to keep doing what you're doing. And again, I commend you for, you know, just taking the step to, you know, check out the therapy thing. And you're doing it, man. And you're willing to put in the work. And you're going to fly.
I'm not doing it even to say I did it. But I think some people, sometimes it can kind of come off that way. And it's like, did you get anything good out of it? Sometimes you get a yes. Sometimes you get a no. And it's like, but at least you did it. At least you saw, you dissected yourself. You had someone else kind of analyze you who you trusted and gave an hour or two.
Absolutely.
Better than just letting it eat you up day by day. And then you get to whatever age you are and then say, oh, that thing when I was 12, I'm thinking about it now.
Yeah. You're going to be great.
Yeah, a little much longer.
No, you're gonna be great.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.